All right, there have been a number of illustrations of how offended we get with injustices that we perceive in the world, in life. So yesterday, late yesterday afternoon, I watched my Razorbacks in a game against Tennessee. It's a rough game. And they finally pulled it out. I thought justice was done. And I noticed looking at the news, at the sports reports then, Tennessee fans were posting on the various social media about how terrible the refs were and how upset they were over that. And there were threats attached to it. Remember, you guys have to come to Tennessee before very long. And we'll see how, that kind of thing. In our broader culture, you think about the situations that have occurred and within the last, just the last 2 years or so, and the cases in the culture where there have been the feelings of injustice on one side or another because of some of the notorious cases of where someone has been killed, or where there has been a big trial, or where there have been demonstrations, or where there have been questions over political shenanigans or whatever, and who did what. And I've concluded two things about it. A, there never is a guilty party. And B, no matter what is decided, somebody's going to be in disagreement with it and upset by it. And that's no less true with our perception about God's rule of His world, if you've noticed that. In Habakkuk, this very relevant little book has the prophet looking at the terrible, terrible ungodliness, injustice, unrighteousness, and decline within Judah and Jerusalem. And we looked at last week illustrations of that from the reigns of kings Manasseh and Ammon, and then what happened with Josiah's efforts to restore things. Just terrible. And so Habakkuk says, "The wicked surrounds the righteous. Justice goes forth perverted." And of course, he doesn't mean he's just stating a fact. He's wanting God to do something about it. And so God answers the prophet in verses 5 and following of chapter 1. In your summary, what is God's answer to this situation? Habakkuk, if you perceive that there's injustice, what does God say about it? Pardon? All right, he's going to take care of it by sending somebody more unjust. and that's what I mean by, that's not what I meant, Lord. So I'd like to go back, and I told you we'd read this again, but at the end of our class last week, verses 5 and following from Habakkuk chapter 1. This is the Lord's answer now in this dialogue that's going on. Look among the nations and see and wonder and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. All right, when the last part of that is, I'm working a work and you wouldn't believe it if I told you. How's that for an answer? You have to believe, number one, that God is working a work, and number two, that even if you wouldn't believe Him, if He told you that's how He's going to do it, He'd still be right. And then number three, you'd have to be willing to stay with Him in spite of what you did not understand. What is there about the relation between God and man that makes that an appropriate arrangement? Well, it's that God's ways are not our ways, and His thoughts are not our thoughts, and which ways and thoughts are higher than the other one? His or ours? His. All right, so He's God and we aren't, and He's a good God, And that means that when it doesn't look good to us, we still trust him loyally. That's the idea. So now, let me continue. Verse 6 of chapter 1. For behold, I'm raising up the Chaldeans. What's the other popular name for the Chaldeans? How do we know them? The Babylonians. All right, that's right. Now, I'm raising up the Chaldeans. Remember, they're just defeating the Assyrians about this time in 612 B.C. Before long, they're going to show up on Jerusalem's doorsteps. That bitter and hasty nation who marched through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. Is that justice? What would you call it when someone seizes dwellings not their own? Stealing, that's right. It's thievery. Are the Chaldeans the only nation in the history of the world to ever have done that? No. And neither is ours, by the way. And you notice that God still rules in the kingdoms of men. Verse 7, they are dreaded and fearsome. Their justice and dignity go forth from themselves, not from God, in other words. Their horses, this is their military power, their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. Their horsemen press proudly on, their horsemen come from afar, they fly like an eagle swift to devour. They all come for violence, their faces are all forward, they gather captives like sand. At kings they scoff, at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. Now that's the ramp that they use to attack or to ascend the walls of the various cities that they take, and then to come over them and to conquer. Then they sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men, whose own might is their God. Is that who you would have chosen to do the work of establishing justice or dispensing justice to Jerusalem and Judea? Judah? No, it isn't. If your own might is your God, then you're arrogant and proud. If you're guilty, how can you dispense justice? So can you see why we had summarized the prophet's feelings? This is how I would have felt. That's not what I had in mind. Now, what kind of a view of things do you have to believe that God can do it this way and still eventually bring righteousness and justice to victory? You have to believe that what you see in a temporary time frame is not the measure of everything. You have to see that even when the Babylonians have run their course, God will still be God. And if he brought Babylon to conquer Assyria, and then if he brings Babylon to establish or to bring judgment to Jerusalem, then what can he do to Babylon? He can bring somebody to judge them too. Who finally takes Babylon? The Persians do. Do any of you remember how the Persians took Babylon? How big a fight, how big a battle, how big of a conflict there was? There wasn't one. Just drive up the river, come on in, take over. God is God, and we can see that looking back on it, but it'd have been hard to see that in the middle of this. So that's kind of where we are now. So the prophet has gotten to raise his complaint, and he's got an answer. And he almost starts out by saying, you're right, I don't believe it. I don't see how you can be working a work that way. That's not what I had in mind. So I start at verse 12 now. Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One, we shall not die. Now, what is he doing in that statement right there? When he says that, we shall not die. He's saying, to start with here, you are God, and we won't die. There is an important factor here about coping with questions and doubts, honest struggles that you have with the way God is ruling his world. He's about to be brutally honest with his questions, but what's the important principle here for us? All right, there is a confession in this, isn't there? Before there's a complaint, there's a confession. The confession is, I don't see how you can do it this way, but I know you're still God, and I don't see how we're going to make it, but I believe we won't die. So God is willing to hear complaints and to respond to them when he knows we are speaking them as his people or as his children. Don't be afraid to tell God in your private personal prayers how you feel, but start with telling him who he is to you, and that you're not saying, God, if you don't explain this to me to my satisfaction, I'm out of here. What you're saying is, I intend to relate my whole life to you, but this is a struggle for me to see how you can do it this way. How can you can exercise your providence in this way? O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment, and you, O rock, have established them for reproof. So what he's saying here is, I believe in your will. I accept that you have the right to work your will and to do it as you choose. Now look at verse 13. You are of purer eyes than to see evil and cannot look at wrongdoing. Why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when wicked swallows up the man, when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he? Isn't that some question? You can't look at iniquity. You can't abide iniquity. I'm going to say it that way. So, how can you let the more wicked swallow up the more righteous? So how can you do it the way you've just said? How can you remain silent when the wicked swallows up the more righteous than he? You can't abide iniquity, so how can you remain silent? Now, in your words, tell me what you think Habakkuk means by this, and why it is such a problem to him. All right, he's questioning God in what way, especially, and what Why is this so hard for him, for Habakkuk? Why is it hard for us? Why is it hard for you? All right, why does he wait? That's one part of it. Tell me what else. What else to you, in your words, what is the issue here that makes it tough for believers? Okay, Julie?
Why you let bad things
happen. All right, she said, why, God, you are a good God. You are faithful and righteous and gracious, why do you let bad things happen to good people? That's the question of the ages, isn't it? Anybody else, can you phrase it in your words?
God's time, not our time.
All right, God's time, not our time. So it's hard for us to figure out or to accept here how God can wait, how God can delay. Ron?
That's pretty much what I was thinking of too. It's kind of, when he first said, God, I know who you are, I know who I am to you, but why are you doing it your way and not my way?
All right. I think if we have a sense of justice, we kind of hold him to that, I think. Can you think of any ways in the New Testament where this same question is phrased or raised? I think of the how long, when people are suffering persecution and they are calling out to God for help. The point is here, the apparent injustice again, where the wicked are swallowing up the righteous, and then God's silence about it. That's the issue. Why doesn't God do something right then? What God's answer to that, back up in verse 5, is what? He's already given part of the answer to it. I'm working to work. I'm doing something about the injustice that you have identified already. Now, verse 14. You make mankind like the fish of the sea, like crawling things that have no ruler. Now, you think about Habakkuk's complaint here. He's saying, God, if you do it that way, we're like a bunch of creatures that have no ruler, and in a situation like that, whoever's strongest wins. It doesn't matter whether they do it with a conscience or not. That's not fair. He brings them all up with a hook. He drags them out with his net. He gathers them in his dragnet, so he rejoices and is glad. And the thing it is here, he's saying, this is the way you're letting the Babylonians treat us. Therefore, he sacrifices to his net. Now, remember what he's saying here. They, in verse 11, what is the god of the Babylonians? Their own might. So if they can come in here like a guy sane in a pond, for all of the, I noticed, and have you got any of you in here ever helped seine a, you know what a seine is? You take this net, one guy holds one end, the other guy has the other end. Any of you ever seined a creek or a pond? Tim has, I have, David. So what do you catch? All right, whatever is there. And then you have to sort them out. Well, he said, you're letting these guys treat people like this. And some of the people like this are way more righteous than they are, but the Babylonian thinks he'll do it because he can. So does the Babylonian who comes know that he's exercising judgment against Jerusalem for God? All right, he thinks he's doing it for himself, and God never even enters his picture, and yet God is using him. Therefore, he sacrifices to his net and makes offerings to his dragnet, for by them he lives in luxury, or by them he has his portion. and his food is rich. Is he then to keep on emptying his net and mercilessly killing nations forever? So what he's saying is injustice or wickedness just going to keep on? So I'm going to raise it this way, put it up here this way. God, if justice is being perverted, look at the ways I'm using just here in two different ways, just going to keep on. If justice is being perverted and you bring a more unjust people to exercise justice, then isn't injustice just going to keep on? Is this just going to be how things are? And if this is just going to be the case, then do our lives really make any difference? Okay. So isn't one of the, I'll go over to 2 Peter chapter 3 now in my mind. You don't need to look. One of the challenges to belief is, all things continue as they always have been, right? The Lord is not going to come. There won't be any judgment. There won't be any end, for all things have continue as they always have. Now, I want to be honest with you. When I first started attending the services of the church, I was an older teenager. I was in high school. I wasn't familiar with a lot of that. And the congregation would have meetings and stuff every year. And what struck me from that is how much of the time the motivation and that was used to try to convict people and compel them to obey the gospel was, I know you think everything goes on like it always has, but you don't know when the end for you will be. You don't know what will be tomorrow. And that was all true, but I'd go to a meeting one year and hear the preacher really stress that point, and then I'd go the next year and hear the same preacher stress the same point, and I would think, I'm still here. This is no big deal. And what I was overlooking is who I was becoming in between. And I was overlooking the fact that some people who were here this year weren't this one, and it could have just as easily been me, right? And that's the thing I'm kind of getting at is when you are concerned over one, you have doubts over one issue, it's easy for you to forget the other issue. You may overlook the fact that the problem you have with injustice is that justice is happening, just not in the way you thought it should. And that's one of the puzzling, one of the really thought-provoking things about Habakkuk to me. Now, chapter 2, verse 1, my time gets away here faster than it should. Verse 1 of chapter 2, I'll take my stand at my watch post and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. What's he saying there? S- Say it. He's waiting on an answer for God. So I'm going to say it this way. God, I'm watching. I bet God is really scared about that. All right, now then, I'm just going to take my stand and I'm going to see what you do about this. The problem is, Habakkuk, God has Jeremiah preaching at the same time. You're going to be in captivity 7 years. That's after 606 when the first invasion occurs. Habakkuk is probably not going to be able to wait at his watch post long enough to see everything God does about it. So how's he going to know? He's going to have to take God's word about it. Are you? Am I? I don't know. It maybe the fulfillment of what God has said will happen before I cross the river, but if not, I'm going to have to take somebody's word about it, aren't I? And I believe it should be his. And so that's the thing about Habakkuk. At least he is willing to wait for an answer. I'll take my stand at my watch post, and then I'll look out to see what he'll say. That's the most important watch post any of us have, is to see what God will say about it. Now, that brings us to the first part of the Lord's answer, and I'm going to do it like this week. I'm going to read part of this, and then we're going to come back to it next week. And the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so that he may run who reads it. So here's the thing. Write this down, because you're not going to be around to see all of the fulfillment of it. You're going to have to depend on what you read at some point. For still the vision awaits the appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. So here's the idea. Wait. He says wait for it, but wait for me is the idea. Wait for what I'm telling you. It will surely come. It will not delay. And then verse 4, behold, his soul is puffed up. It's not upright within him. But the righteous shall live by faith. All right. The just shall live by faith. Have you ever heard that statement before? The righteous shall live by his faith. First, what does that mean to Habakkuk? What's God saying to Habakkuk? All right, you're going to have to believe me enough to know that I'll do the right thing and to be willing to stay with me and wait for my work to be finished. You can't evaluate it in the middle of the stream just in your brief span of time. You're going to have to look at the bigger picture than that. You can't look at one event. You have to look at the whole thing. That's one thing that it means. Habakkuk this is the biggest issue in this book, and this is the one that comes in the New Testament. Now, in Romans, this word to Habakkuk gets used to talk about how in our becoming Christians, we accept what Christ did for us by the kind of loyal and obedient faith that's called for here. This is in Romans 1 and verse 17 and Galatians 3 and verse 11 with regard to the gospel. Remember Romans 1, 17, and then 16 and 17, the gospel is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes. That idea, and then verse 17 follows with this. And then it also, this principle is used in Hebrews 10 and verse 38 for how someone who has become a Christian then runs the race with patience and stays with it. All right, where are you in this drama? In this dialogue that's going on between God and His prophet, I hope I'm in all of it. I know I'm in some of it. I hope I'm here and here too. And that might help us to think in our minds of how to process some injustice that we'll struggle with this coming week. Things happen in the providence of God that are tough to take, hard to understand. We should verbalize in our conversations with God how we really are feeling. And here's a healthy way to do it. Start with a confession. Express your loyalty, your commitment. It can't depend on your getting the answer from God that pleases you. If you believe who He is, then you're going to stay with Him, but you have questions. How can you? How can you do it that way? And then express your fear. I'm afraid this means justice, injustice is just going to always come out on top. And then watch and wait. And then hear God say, "Be still and know that I am God." Remember from Psalm 46? And then this principle here sometimes is the answer we need. The righteous is the one who lives by his faith. And that means that we walk with God either way. Anything he wants to say before that dreaded by me, that other bell. Ron?
I find out the situations in my lifetime that I have to renew that list on a daily basis.
That's the point I'm... Yeah, I'm with you, and that's the point I'm making. I think this is our story, if we think. Faith isn't just a happy, one-time experience. I believe. End of story. It's when we meet on the Lord's Day and we observe the Lord's Supper, aren't we really confessing again and expressing our determination to walk with the Lord through this new week? Yes, we are. And that's a healthy way. God knows it's not easy for us. And he knows that we don't always find ourselves in a position to understand why he is ruling the way he is. But he invites us to make our hearts known to him and then to walk with him no matter what. Anybody else with something to say before we end? All right, I surely do appreciate your being here to think with us this morning. Hope you have a great week this week.